stay right here on KSCO Radio.
So your favorite radio station will break the silence on sex offenders this Saturday. What causes exhibitionism and pedophilia? Did you know that 80% of all pedophiles become child molesters? Or that the most common child molester by far is a totally trusted friend or relative of the victim? Did you know that frequently people do sexual things for non-sexual reasons, and that because of this, correct diagnosis is critical? Understandably, society is becoming less tolerant. But along the way, civil liberties are being abridged and more people are serving longer sentences than ever before, sentences that may not fit the crime. What can the community do to keep children at minimal risk of psychological, physical, or sexual abuse? Find out on the next KSCO special with forensic psychologist Dr. John C. Brady and criminal defense attorney William Chestnut this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on We Sweep Nothing Under the Rug Radio, AM 1080 KSCO. You, but I've always felt that sex offenders and drunk drivers are like the lowest whale turds at the bottom of the ocean here in our society. And I still feel that way. But there are sex offenders and there are sex offenders. And some people have been branded sex offenders who either aren't or just in a wrong category and so forth. And So it's going to be sort of a different kind of program, as I said earlier. Want to welcome our special guest, forensic psychologist Dr. John Brady, Ph.D. Welcome to KSCO, John.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
And we also have criminal defense attorney William Chestnut, practices out of San Jose. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Now, you guys have been working together for years, I guess, right?
Right.
John, what's a forensic psychologist?
A forensic psychologist is a psychologist that is practices limited to basically criminal cases, civil litigation cases, any cases where there's a mental element which has to be evaluated in order to proceed with a particular case.
A mental element.
Mental element. Not guilty by reason of insanity, whether or not there's a condition, a psychiatric condition that precipitates a particular offense or crime. So in the law, it's necessary to have a mental element in order to commit a crime, as a matter of fact.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Something changed many years ago, and the something I'm referring to, I swear that when I was a youngster, I would hear on Perry Mason and in the news that there were frequent pleas of guilty and guilty by reason of insanity. You don't hear guilty by reason of insanity anymore. You hear not guilty by reason of insanity. Am I right?
Well, Bill can address this, but basically it's a divided verdict. The guilt phase is the first phase. The second phase is the insanity phase.
Okay, but what I mean, it used to be that if you could be proven to be insane, then you could get off. Excuse me. I made a mistake. It was innocent by reason of insanity. Don't you remember that kind of a? And it was years ago. You don't hear that anymore.
Well, it might have been before my time.
Yeah.
Usually it's the plea is not guilty by reason of insanity.
Not guilty by reason of insanity.
And it is a question for the jury and sometimes the judge. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know. It's been bothering me for years because it just seems to me that they've
well, it's changed. It's a little confusing because there are two trials.
Right.
So there's a guilt phase. And then there's the insanity phase. So in the insanity phase, you asked about what a forensic psychologist
yes.
does. The forensic psychologist then would present information, psychiatric data, testing information, interview information to either verify or to nullify the notion that the person is insane at the time of the crime.
Okay. All righty. Right. So that's what you do.
And it's quite a specialty, I understand. There aren't too many people who do what you do, right? I mean, as psychologists go, or?
Well, it's kind of a unique specialty, and I've enjoyed it for 25 years because I get to work with some of the best legal minds like Bill's in Santa Clara County.
Thank you, John.
It's very rewarding, particularly when you're dealing with people and you have to figure out in every single case, you have to attempt to figure out what was the person's mental state when they engaged in this behavior, whether it's sex behavior, whether it's shoplifting, whether it's assault, whether it's rape. You're charged with the responsibility of trying to figure these people out, and I've never found anything in 25 years that was more fascinating than trying to figure people out.
And okay, now Bill, so it's really a two-step process. I mean, when someone gets into trouble, the first thing they do is call an attorney, I thought. Is the second thing that they do is call you, or the attorney calls the forensic?
Usually I would call John. Uh-huh. I would tell the client right up front that, you know, this is a case where you're going to need a forensic psychologist.
I gotcha.
And I would be very concerned about, you know, the person's ability to do that, to cooperate with us. Because if that's the way I see the case going, then that's what I need him to do. I need him to contact John and go from there.
All right. Now, without mentioning names, give us a potpourri of your typical of cases. Probably no cases.
Well,
typical.
A lot of times we have theft cases where people have a particular disorders that cause them to behave in the way they do that have nothing to do with trying to steal to make any money or anything like that. People with a lot of money, or they have a disorder that John can evaluate through a series of tests, and he could tell you more about that.
Okay, like kleptomania, for example.
Yeah, right? That's right. But the cases that we deal with in the Valley, in San Jose, are essentially cases where it's not for economic gain. And they're not kleptomaniacal either. People steal for other reasons than for economic gain. Usually these people are well-off, high-net-worth people who engage in theft as a symptom of an underlying kind of behavior that they haven't sought resolution to.
Example.
Example of a woman who was from Taiwan. She, a very wealthy Asian woman who engaged in repeated theft behavior, didn't know why, married to a doctor in San Jose. And as we got into the case, we found that she had been molested as a child in Taiwan. And every time her brother molested her when she was about 10, every time her brother name was mentioned or he was going to come over for a visit, she would engage in shoplifting and get caught. She didn't realize this until we did some hypnosis and we bridged her back to the time that she was assaulted. Her entire life was led based on a guilt syndrome, that she felt that she was a willing participant somehow in the original assault. So every time the brother would come over, she would go to Nordstrom or another store, engage in shoplifting behavior, get caught, and then she felt guilty and she wanted to be punished for it.
Had this assault earlier in her life, was it out in the open?
No.
So you uncovered this and through this hypnosis.
Right. It was through what's called a hypnotic affect bridge. So you take the person back in time to try and find out the cause. When did you first have these thoughts? She goes back, in this case, 15 years, and she remembers the assault pretty vividly. So we dealt
with. No one else knew about it.
Nobody else knew about it.
No one else knew about it right up until the time that you were talking to her.
That's right. But this is why there are. What you think you see sometimes is not the real reason that people commit crimes.
That is totally fascinating. Whatever became of that woman?
Once I brought you an article on that that case. Once she realized this, once it came into her awareness that this is the reason that she was engaging in theft behavior, then she didn't have to feel guilty anymore because she had nothing to do with this. This was an assault of sexual molest by her brother. So once she realized she had nothing to do with it, all of this guilt was dissipated, and she felt, you know, she felt that she didn't have to do this anymore.
What happened to the brother? Did anybody?
No, nothing happened to the brother. He probably stopped coming to dinner, so that was helpful.
Yeah, because, jeez. Is there a statute of limitations for crimes like that? There isn't for murder.
There are statute of limitations,
that's a
Bill
question here.
And they're extensive and very liberal. There are different ones.
Uh-huh.
There are different statutes for different crimes.
Okay, using this as an example.
Usually.
If the woman had chosen to prosecute her brother for this mm-hmm. crime 15 or 20 years earlier, could she have done so?
Well, I don't know. Was she in Taiwan when this happened or here?
She was in Taiwan when she was assaulted. Then she moved here and lived in Sunnyvale.
I don't believe there'd be any jurisdiction here. She couldn't be. That's my bottom line opinion.
Right.
They couldn't do anything here. Usually, but as far as the statute's concerned, it's within a certain period, usually 10 years now at the outset. Or when they reach 28, they have so much time to prosecute. So that kind of goes back. There are different statutes.
Right.
They're liberally construed.
A good part of your practice, Bill, is probably defending child molesters. Is that correct?
I'm getting more and more of them all the time, yes.
Okay.
I'm not a specialist in that area, but I get so many cases now that touch on that I'm forced to.
Is that because you've been doing it a long time or because there's more of it going on?
I think it could be both. And in terms of more of it going on, you know, population has increased. So we got a lot of more people here in the Valley or in Santa Clara Valley and around the Bay Area. That's one reason. And the other reason is it may be increasing. John, do you have any take on that?
Well, the numbers of assaults seem to be increasing. I mean, there's about 2 million child molestation victims a year, 2 million females and about 1 million males. So,
in this country?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so and the number of survivors, you asked what happened to this lady from Taiwan.
Yeah.
The number of survivors in the 40 million rank area. 40 million survivors of sexual assault at some level. So it's a big number, it's a big issue, and that's why Bill and I are stay pretty busy.
In coming up with a promo for this, I was reading, you know, information on both of you and just sort of taking notes of our brief phone conversations. And one of the things I said in the promo, something that I read somewhere, you know, in my research about people doing sexual things for non-sexual reasons. What you just described, John, is the reverse. People doing non-sexual
it
things
is the reverse.
For sexual reasons. What's an example, either one of you gentlemen, of people doing sexual things for non-sexual reasons? And if it is proven that a sexual offense has been committed for a non-sexual reason, so what? Should the punishment be any less than if it was for a sexual reason?
Let me start on this, John, before you take over. There are cases where people appear to be doing something sexual, but in reality, something else has happened. All right.
Okay, example.
An example would be, I hate to talk about any ongoing cases I have right now.
Don't mention names.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
I don't think you were going to anyhow, but.
A mother touches a son's, actually pulls, the son gets his, a 5-year-old son gets his penis stuck in a bathing suit. Is crying, and mom comes and rips the suit down. It injures the boy. The penis was caught, and the boy doesn't forget about that. And later it surfaces as a sexual allegation, even though mom was trying to help the kid at the time. It comes out, and other people play into it. Ex-husband, new wife. There's all kinds of reasons why people will report something like that, and then you have a person who may be completely innocent and yet they're facing the gauntlet of the system, which is merciless, absolutely merciless in most of these systems. Although, when you get to a judge who's understanding, you can carve out a sentence for this person who really wasn't guilty. The problem is you have to argue to a jury and convince them that, you know, she's really not guilty. So, John, did you have anything?
No, I'm familiar with that case, and that's a very good example. There's an example that I told Michael on the phone the other day about a lady, 35-year-old woman, attractive person, who was arrested for exhibitionism. She was exposing herself in a parking lot. Actually, a truck driver reported her to a park ranger. I guess truck drivers have changed a lot since I was young, but he reported her to the park ranger and had her arrested for exhibitionism. So the attorney referred the woman over, and we did a complete psychological examination, and what we discovered is that this really wasn't a sex crime at all. What happened is that she lost her leg in an accident, part of her foot and her lower leg, and she camouflages this by wearing these expensive leather boots. So what she wanted to do is she wanted to appear as a whole person, not as a segmented person without a leg. She wanted to be sexy again and to be appealing. So she would put on these boots and then expose herself. So once this, it was like an overcompensatory behavior to make her feel better about herself, she engaged in this behavior. She could have used other outlets, but this is the one that she used. Once she realized that she didn't have to do this through counseling, that she really was a whole person, she was attractive, she had a lot of positive qualities, then into the future she didn't have to engage in this behavior.
Uh-huh.
So there's an unresolved conflict that she had, which expresses itself in a sexual crime. It's really not a sexual crime. And the answer to your other question is, do these kinds of crimes have a lower penalty? Yes, because once the judge figured out that this really wasn't a dangerous, perverse lady, that she had psychological problems, then she was given probation.
That could probably be addressed, those psychological problems.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you say that there's an increase in incidence of child molestation, I think we were talking about. What do you think the reason is? Is it just the increasing stress of our lives, and that's the way some people manifest it? Or?
Well, I'm going to refer to John there because I think he's got a little more information than I do.
Well, I think it's the criteria that are applied to defining what these crimes are. The criteria have become so loosely defined that, as Bill said, even with the case that he had at the swimming pool, people are suddenly charged. So you have a blanket that's dropped over everybody, and there's kind of an hysteria, sort of a paranoid hysteria that pervades society, and suddenly we want to single out one group as outcasts. And this group happens to become pedophiles. In the old days, 100 years ago, when they had prisons and psychiatric hospitals, those facilities were built on the perimeter of cities, and it served as a boundary. It served as a boundary, so you didn't want to go there. It was a line of demarcation. So we don't have those anymore. Now we have the prisons and the psychiatric hospitals integrated into the community. Now we chose a different group of people, and those are pedophiles that we present as outcasts, and society has this hysterical reaction to them, which increases the vigilance of law enforcement, prosecutors, and other people that bring this to our attention.
Wow. And so the pendulum sort of swings a little too far or further than it should sometimes. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just...
Well,
people are getting wrongfully charged now and then, right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's happened throughout throughout the ages.
Absolutely.
I mean, people are charged with murder, and it find and people find out later, 20 years later after they've been in prison, that you know, with DNA testing that wasn't available when they were first convicted, that it was clearly innocent and someone else was guilty.
Well, we're all citizens when we pick up the newspaper and open the page, and we usually read something shocking, and you know, maybe a sex crime, and we're shocked by it. I'm shocked by it.
Yeah.
John's shocked by it. We just,
especially if it's by
react.
Someone that you know, who you think is an upstanding person.
Sure.
That's the last person I would have thought to do that.
It's a gut reaction. I've talked to a lot of my friends in bail bond business, attorneys, so forth. People, not necessarily defense attorneys. We kind of keep this stuff below the belt, but a lot of people say, oh, castrate them all. You know, just let's just take care of the problem. Castrate everybody. And I mean,
and they used to do that, right?
Well,
not everybody, but they used to, that used to be a sentence, right?
Well, there is chemical castration now.
Right. I was going to ask about that. But I mean, physical castration, that hasn't been done in our society for many years. But isn't it true that in some societies it was and is?
Well, I believe you're right. I believe that's true, but I don't have any.
How does chemical castration work?
Chemical castration is the use of a progesterone drug that reduces the libido or the sex drive ostensibly in the offender. Lots of times it doesn't work, and lots of times there were those cases where people were physically castrated and that didn't work either.
What?
So there's other reasons other than an increase in testosterone that people engage in these kinds of offenses. What we have to do is to figure out the false positives from those people that are falsely accused. We have to psychologically.
Too bad there's not the equivalent of DNA testing.
No, and there won't be. I mean, that's not going to happen. But what can happen is that the testing tools that we use can become more refined and sophisticated, so we can determine whether or not a person has a certain set of deviant sexual interests that predispose them to engaging in pedophilia, for example.
And, John, you have a specific a lot of tests you can administer that will actually shed light on that.
That's right. I mean, there are psychological tests that are computer oriented that present certain kinds of images to people, and they respond to those images, and then you have a better picture of a person who has a deviant sexual interest pattern as opposed to those that don't have deviant sexual interest patterning.
Does anybody ever come to you not having been convicted, but saying, I feel something bad about to happen? Can you examine me? Can you talk with me? Has that ever happened?
Well, I've had people that thought that they were on the cusp of engaging in behavior that was unwelcome, that they thought they might have had a bad fantasy or something was going to take over their lives and they were going to engage in behavior. By the way, if you have a person like that and it becomes dangerous, then you have to report them, which is one of the issues. So you lose confidentiality at that point. But there are those people that come to you that are on the edge. They think they have some sort of an issue that's rising in their personality, and then maybe they can't control it.
The threshold where you have a legal obligation to report, as you've stated, is it always clearly identifiable? You know, because the confidential patient-doctor relationship, attorney-client, you know, confidentiality and so forth. By the way, as an attorney, you don't have a similar thing.
I'm not aware that I do. If somebody calls in and says I do, I'll have to consider it. But I've never reported anybody that comes to me.
Is it a fine line or is it a blurred line, John?
No,
you've probably had to use it.
I have had to do that. I have. I've had people arrested in my office for reporting certain kinds of situations. One was a child molestation case where the couple came in because of job stress, and the real reason for the visit, as the wife said, was tell the doctor actually what happened. And the guy says what happened is that he molested his niece. And when that took place, then that was an issue. But that didn't end the story. What happened is that the grandmother then blackmailed this gentleman and kept saying that you have to paint the house, you have to do this, you've got to fix my car, you have to do all these errands for me, or our secret will get out. So at that, yeah, as Bill said, with these, the familial stuff on these cases is sometimes unbelievable. There's blackmail, extortion, career-ending accusations where people are falsely accused, and that's why they need defense.
If someone comes to you for help, help me before I do something terrible, and then you hear something that you say, oh, my gosh, if I don't report this, then I'm breaking the law. God, that's got to be a heavy stuff for you. Heavy.
I'm about 180. I mean, it's within the parameter of what I have to deal with. I mean, you have to deal with the FCC or somebody. We have to deal with the state mandatory reporter requirements. If there's somebody who has committed a sexual crime and you're a doctor, a marriage counselor, a physician, and other categories, you have to report that. In this case, I did report this guy. I called the police. The guy went over and put his hand through the wall. I got the wife out in the other room and had him arrested. He said, I came here for help, and now you got me arrested.
Uh-huh.
I said, that's part of the help program.
Yeah, attorneys aren't obligated to report. I think if
you did that, you'd probably be disbarred.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't have any clients. Now there is an exception, however, if somebody brought me a murder weapon and brought it in, said, "Hey, here's the weapon," I'd be under kind of an affirmative obligation to do something with that. Now, I think the one exception is I could have it tested before I handed it over to the police. But I think if I was going to keep it, I'd have to hand it over to somebody. I can't conceal evidence of a crime as an attorney. I would be disbarred.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so the laws are getting more and more restrictive. Laws don't ever get less and less restrictive on anything.
I
mean, that's why we have a legislature. That's why we have a Congress, right, is to make laws, and laws don't get less restrictive. They get more restrictive, I think, all the time, right?
Well, and yes, and partly as a result in this area, because you read these sensational cases of these molest cases where people are kept for 20 years and molested. And, I mean, you got this guy who just makes it horrible for everybody.
All right, let's talk about Megan's Law. Okay, Megan's Law came into being when?
Oh, gosh, I should know that. But
20 years ago, something like that? Or?
No, I don't think that long.
Megan's Law, for the benefit of our audience, tell us what Megan's Law is, where you just have to mandatory, if you've been convicted of a sex-related crime, you have to register.
You have to register.
With your local authorities.
With your local authorities, you have to do
forever,
that.
Forever, right?
Forever. Once a year on your birthday and every time you move within 5 days. If you decide, and I've had this question come up, people have called me over the phone, what if dad's coming to live with me 2 days a week and then goes back to his house? I mean, is he in violation of the law, of the registration laws? Yes, he is. You could argue that, well, he has 5 days to report that, but he has to report that he's living in two places. He can't just go live with daughter and then go back home, and this does happen.
If you move to another country?
Well, if you move to another country, you probably don't have to register, you know. I don't know.
That's what I would think, too.
You could tell him, hey, I'm leaving.
But I know of an instance where that apparently is not the case. So
I'd like to hear that.
Well, off the air.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Off the air, tell
off
me.
The air. But, yeah, I mean, I think so hasn't Megan's Law been strengthened or made?
Every year.
Every year. Okay,
yeah,
so what's happened? Why did it come into being in the first place? And it sounds like it's a good idea. Of course you want.
Obviously, the public wants to be advised where people are living, where people on the list are living. Okay. They want to be up, you know, they want to be brought up to speed. Police departments also are working overtime in enforcing Megan's Law. They are checking up on these guys all the time.
Uh-huh.
Which John and I have discussed this a lot. You have people who are very minor risk that are put to the same test as everybody else. And any technical violation is a violation, and you are prosecuted, period. Boom.
And the prosecution is pretty severe.
It is. In Santa Clara County, it is.
Oh, it's different in different counties.
Well, in Santa Cruz, I couldn't tell you. I haven't had a 290 registration case over here, but I know over there it's the wrong place to violate that particular section of the law.
I'll be darned. We are talking sexual... What are we talking? Sexual crimes, sexual the way mm-hmm. the way our society handles with a forensic psychiatrist, a psychologist, Dr. John Brady, and a criminal defense attorney William Chestnut, both practice in the Santa Clara Valley. It's your favorite radio station, or if it's not, it should be. AM 1080 KSCO, the Saturday special. My name is MZ, pilot in command. Today is Dave Michaels, who's got some commercials for us. And after we come back, we're going to open the phone lines. If you want to give us a call and ask a question or relate a story, you can call us at 479-1080, 479-1080. That's in area 831 in case you're outside the area code. Or you can send an email to mz@ksco.com if you would prefer to participate in that manner. Take it away, Dave. Back in a few minutes.
Don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, I seem to be bad. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
If you work the land, Webb's Farm Supplies in Soquel and Husqvarna Power Tools can make your work easy. Whether you need professional-grade power for landscape and trees or consumer-grade power for home and garden, Webb's Farm Supplies has world-leading Husqvarna Power Tools. Saws, trimmers, cutters, mowers, and parts for anything and everything new or obsolete. At 5381 Old San Jose Road for over 65 years, it's Webb's Farm Supplies and Husqvarna. Visit webbs-farmsupplies.com or call 475-1020. 475-1020.
It's the North versus the South again, but this time you get to watch all the action. Hello, sports fans. KO here with KSCO Sports. Join me and all your friends and neighbors at 3 p.m. this Saturday. We'll be at Cabrillo College as high school seniors from the South County go head-to-head with the seniors from the North County in the Lions Senior Bowl. Seniors from Harbor, San Lorenzo Valley, Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, and Soquel will represent the North. Seniors from Aptos, Pajaro Valley, St. Francis, Monta Vista Christian, and Watsonville will represent the South. This is our county. They're our boys. They're all seniors. And this will be their last game together. So let's all show up at Carl Connolly Stadium at Cabrillo College this Saturday at 3 p.m. and cheer them all on to victory. It's the North versus the South and the return of the Lions Senior Bowl. Get in on all the fun, food, and friends Saturday at 3 p.m. and I'll see you there.
Ben Lomond Market, Scotts Valley Market. Low price, great savings, quality, and service that doesn't always cost you more.
Hi, I'm Andy, the produce manager at Ben Lomond Market. This week, we are featuring, from the Northwest, large Bosque and DeAnjou pears for 79 cents a pound. From Mexico, we have cucumbers, 3 for 99 cents, and Italian squash, 79 cents a pound. With Christmas right around the corner, we have some great gift ideas. 5-pound bags of premium apples and oranges, 3-pound bag clementines, 5-pound boxes organic satsumas, and 3-pound bags organic Granny Smith apples. Also, assorted nuts in the shell and 1-pound packages of medjool date. New arrivals, blood oranges, and pomelos. The pomelos are great for making candy citrus. So come and enjoy the great selection of fresh produce at Ben Lomond Market and Scotts Valley Market. Ho, ho, ho.
Ever seen a CalStar helicopter flying to or from an accident scene? Ever wondered about the service? Hi, I'm Bill Graff. Recently, my wife needed a CalStar air ambulance following a car accident. I learned that CalStar is called when emergency responders think you need to get to a hospital in a hurry. While we hope you never need to fly with CalStar, we understand the financial ramifications of an air ambulance transport. Even insured patients may be left with thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expenses. CalStar offers an affordable answer. It's the CalStar membership program. They even work with members' insurance providers, if they have coverage, to secure payment for their air medical services and then waive any remaining balance due. CalStar memberships are available to anyone, even if you're uninsured. CalStar made sure my wife got to a local trauma center in minutes. and she's okay. Find out more about the CalSTAR membership program. Call 888-207-LIFE or online at calstar.org.
The winter storm season has arrived here in California, and that means an increased chance of power outages. Pacific Gas and Electric Company works hard to prepare for and minimize storm-related outages. However, some things are just in Mother Nature's control. And the most important thing for you to do is keep safe. PG&E asks that you report any downed power lines immediately by calling 1-800-PGE-5002. Again, that's 1-800-PGE-5002. You should never try to touch or move the lines yourself. If you lose power at home, turn off or unplug appliances to prevent the risk of equipment damage when your power is restored. At your request, we'll be happy to provide you with a call when it's safe to plug them back in. When an outage does occur, PG&E is doing everything they can to get your power restored as quickly as possible and give you up-to-date information on your expected time of restoration. The 20,000 dedicated men and women of PG&E thank you for your patience and encourage you to stay safe.
You're listening to KSCO, serving Fort Ord, Moss Landing, and Yanada.
Well, we did have two callers, but I guess they got chicken bleep and hung up. Welcome back to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday special with criminal defense attorney William Chestnut and forensic psychologist Dr. John Brady. We're talking about sex crimes. And during the break, it was brought up that what's the number you call it for registration, for registering for a sex
as a 290. Sex
offender? 290, okay. The 290 is now being meted out by some judges as a punishment for things that where it just doesn't apply or something like that?
Dr. Brady, John, explain your statement. Yeah.
It's used when there are misdemeanor charges. If there's a minor sex case, they will lower the charge in some cases in order to get to the registration part of the law. So they really
What's
don't...
What's a minor sex charge?
Well, it might be minor touching. It might be a sexual assault, Bill. That's less than pedophilia, right?
Sexual assault, but if it's a felony, it's still registrable. In fact, some misdemeanors are, too. It's in the discretion of the judge, yes.
That's right. It is in the discretion of the judge whether or not the person should register. Some of them, that's right. So it's another way of adversely affecting people who are charged.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
Adversely affecting people who are if the shoe fits, you know, but what if the shoe doesn't fit? And that's what,
well, there are some, for an example, statutory rape that doesn't necessarily fit, and the judge has discretion there. He doesn't have to have you register, so, you know, in many cases he won't.
Right, so it's totally up to the judge. And once that is handed down,
well, it's not totally up to the judge. There are certain enumerated sections under 290 where they must have registration. Most are felonies, some are misdemeanors, but it's absolutely mandatory to register. And it is a nightmare for the registrants. They don't remember a lot of times. They'll get on the phone with me and they're lost. They don't know, and I have to help them out. I mean, they're facing prosecution because they failed to register.
So they get notified, hey, you didn't register, and
they get arrested
after you?
They get arrested. Yeah, the cops are looking for them. They call me up. Hey, they're looking for me. Oh, well, what? Failed to register. Well, you know, and then I get this, you know, they didn't quite do it in time, or they didn't, you know, and they're on the hook, and the district attorney in our county prosecutes those to the full extent of the law. So.
Now, I guess the internet has been an integral part of our lives now for a good, easily 15 years, right?
Yes.
And so when Megan's Law was first implemented, was that before or during? In other words, people can find out by going to Megan's Law.
Absolutely.
Megan's Law, if they're sex offenders.
Anybody in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Anybody in the neighborhood.
They can check it out.
You just type in your address and a list will
come
up.
They get a list, yes, that's correct.
And is the list, is it Is it specific? I mean, is it?
Does it say what's quite specific.
Yeah. I mean, it gives pictures and it gives addresses,
names,
and the history of their offenses and the types of offenses and so on.
I'm not sure about that. In fact, I'd have to go on to Megas List to tell you that, but they definitely can be located. I mean, by name.
Uh huh.
As far as their criminal history, I don't think that's on there, but I could be wrong on that.
Do you think that there are some people who believe that the Megan's Law is just too strict and too? How do you guys feel about that?
Well, this idea of living with
can anything be too strict when it comes?
I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, John, you've got some very specific information on the kinds of people that. The kinds of situations where you have a molester. You were talking about familial situations, and you mentioned Uncle Leroy, and I think that's very relevant to our discussion here.
Uncle Leroy? No, never mind.
Well, there's as we said before, there's a complete paranoid mindset out there concerning these people. How many there are, who they are, where they are, what they look like, and the issue is that only 10% of strangers are molested. 68% or more are intrafamilial or family related. So instead of watching the guy hanging out at McDonald's with the raincoat on, we ought to be looking at Weird Willie, our uncle, and paying more attention to people in the family if the preponderance of these people come from a family setting. But it's just the opposite. All of the 290 registration, all the law enforcement, all the money is spent to demonize this situation to create a very clever set of outcasts in the community so somebody feels better about it. Actually, it doesn't serve anybody's purposes to spend all this time and money to find out where these guys are on Megan's List because the real offender is as close as our dinner table sometimes.
Uh-huh. Well, that being true, what should we do?
Well,
what should be done?
My suggestion for parents, and I've heard this from a number of people, is that, and I don't have small children any longer, is for gosh sakes, we've all seen nature programs where the mother bird flies away from her nest and here comes the crane or the eagle and picks up the chicks and gulps them down and she's gone. Now, if you're going to go out to a mall, I can't think of a better place for a predator to wait and look for small children. Keep an eye on your children, for God's sake. It's your job as a parent. We have to take care of this. I mean, this is nothing new. It's not like we have...
So, take care of your kids,
take care of your kids.
Yeah,
don't let them get in situations like that. Uh-huh. And I've heard it in the neighborhood, you know. Some parents allow their kids to run out and walk on fences, toddlers, and running all over the place. And, I mean, how the heck can you be safe when you allow your children? Can they be safe? So.
I have received not an email, but a text message. That's what that was that you heard. Did I? I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Did I do that okay?
You did it great.
It was not. You guys are so kind. People said I did a good Monster Mash last week, and I think they were just being very, very kind, and I appreciate that. Hey, MZ, good show. Could you ask your guests about how different cultural norms regarding what is considered normal, in quotes, affect or complicate things? Since California no longer has a single culture, what happens if a, quote, foreign, unquote, culture has established itself here and has a behavior pattern they consider normal but our law considers deviant? Can a member of that group sue for discrimination against their culture? Ooh, what a great question. Who wants it? Well, that's a Bill question.
Is that a Bill question? I was going to defer that to John. But
it could be a both.
It could be a both question. But, yeah. You know, basically, if you're, I mean, I understand there are cultural, there are cultures that permit younger children to be married, to have sex. But you're not in, if you're in California.
In Rome, do you like the Romans?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. If you're in California, you better watch out. And you can sue anybody you want if you can find an attorney to do it.
And you can in California.
And you might be able to. There's some hungry attorneys here. But I just, if you're going to move here, I think if I had to move somewhere else, I'd have to obey their laws. So I don't, That's my take on it.
But that's such a good question because there's so many ridiculous court cases that you hear about. You know, we used to carry the Phil Hendry show, and he would did you used to listen to that?
Yeah, I did.
John? Yeah.
I did.
So I mean, crazy stuff, but it's so crazy, it's very believable because truth is stranger than fiction. I mean, these wild, nutty situations that you just think are absolutely ridiculous, but they're happening in real life every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's Bobby Dooley and her situation at the trailer park. You know, back to the question, I mean, it's a very interesting question, and it probably has some merit because what the texter is saying is representative. There are more people coming here from other cultures. They have different mores. They have different kinds of shame and guilt societies. They have different kinds of a sexual developmental stages that they go through. For example, if you have a Samoan, when Samoa was studied by the anthropologists, they go through a natural sexual process where children are involved. When, as Bill said, when they come here,
is that right?
It's totally inappropriate and immoral and illegal to engage in that kind of behavior. But you can see if you had a group of people from Samoa who engage in this behavior, they may not even know it's illegal to do this because it's a natural step towards a wholesome heterosexual development. Hmm. Which usually leads to marriage. But prior to marriage, they did engage in sexual behavior with children, but it was seen as a necessary stage.
Hmm. I'll be darned.
Interesting.
We're talking with criminal defense attorney William Chestnut and forensic psychologist Dr. John Brady here on the Saturday special for this Saturday, September 18th. You're invited to participate if you care to. 479-1080 is the phone number to call in if you want to be part of the program. You can send an email to mz@ksco.com. It's a topic that makes people uncomfortable.
It does.
And I believe that we have a lot of people listening to the station. And I suppose I shouldn't be too surprised that we don't have a call. Dave must have gone to relieve nature's internal pressure or something. I was going to ask Dave because we did get a couple of calls earlier that looked like they were going to go on hold, that went on hold, but they disappeared. So maybe it's because we answered the question. I don't know. But in any case, so what are some of the more interesting cases? I'm going to ask each of you. The most memorable, interesting, unusual, fascinating, surprising case that you've handled, whether it's a sexually related case or not. Bill.
Well, I had a robbery at Orchard Supply where the young man was an employee and he made some statement to one of the co-workers that had nothing to do with the robbery, but it indicated he might be untrustworthy. And all of a sudden, he was the focus of a police investigation. And this was a crime because of the number of patrons standing in line that carried about a 75-year sentence because the person came in with a gun and, you know, took stuff from the cash register, but everybody was threatened. So this had a lot of repercussions for my client, who was absolutely innocent. He did have a companion case where he had less than an ounce of marijuana. But in this case, it was fascinating because the policeman was so intent on getting him. We had a lineup where there was no question. It was a photo lineup where there was no question that the officer was so zealous that he suggested who the person was to the witness looking at the lineup, and it happens all the time. And essentially, they picked out my client from the pictures because they put his picture in there, and there was some indication from the officer, how about this guy, you know, what about this one, pointing at it over and over again. And so finally, the victim.
It's like he had it in for him.
Oh, well, the guy, you know, and the funny thing was, It was It was just so unfortunate for my client because he was taken into custody with a huge bail, and he subsequently went to trial in custody, although we had a suit on him. Everybody knew he was in custody. And finally, the witness who had made the identification went sideways, and the other witness wasn't sure. We had an alibi. We had the guy, we had clothes that he was said to possess, and they went right over to his house and took all his clothes, and he didn't have those clothes. He wasn't in the clothes. Of course, he could have taken them off, but essentially, it was just the officer took the stand, and he made the case for us. He was just so he just blundered on and made the case for us, and the guy was acquitted. The judge, however, who heard it was a hanging judge, and he gave him 6 months on possession and less of an ounce of marijuana, and told him you got away with this, and that was an interesting case.
He was acquitted, but. Was he convicted of anything?
Possession of less than an ounce of marijuana.
So he was, okay.
Yeah,
even a hanging judge can't give a sentence to somebody who hasn't been convicted of anything. Right.
But that's something nowadays you get a $50 fine for.
Right.
Less, so,
right.
You know, and this was only several years ago, so it was pretty much the same.
Right.
So.
Anyway. Oh, my gosh. There's less than 2 minutes before the top of the hour. Let's take our caller, Cameron, in Aptos. Cameron, welcome to the KSCO Saturday Special. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I have a question for the psychologist.
Okay.
I'm a psychologist. Now, and I also happen to have a German Shepherd dog who's a year old, and he's very aggressive. And so he'll bark at people and bark at dogs. Finally, what we finally had to use after trying everything was a shock collar, which we've used very, very little bit. But it works, I must say. So my question, I have two parts. One, is the use of low levels of shock used successfully coupled with pictures that this is what you don't do? Is that used effectively? That's part of my question. And secondly, what tools do you like best? What instruments do you like best for the diagnosis of pedophilia?
Well, it's a very, very good question. The
a little closer to the mic, please.
The first question is concerning the aversive conditioning or the use of shock. That's one of the preferred treatments, actually, with sex offenders, is aversive conditioning. It's not necessarily shock anymore, but they use an antagonistic chemical, usually ammonia, and they pair that with showing the person pictures. When they see the picture, they get a shot of ammonia. It pairs that as a bad response, and the theory is this will decondition the behavior towards, let's say, children.
Right.
So that's a pretty positive, or not positive, but that's a well-known treatment that's used with sex offenders, for example, at Coalinga State Hospital.
Excuse me, I hate to do this, but we're already into the news here. So let's hold that. Let's hold Cameron over into the next hour here, if you don't mind, Cameron. It's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. We join Fox News in progress.
In shock when I found out that how well it has worked for this a long period of time.
A vote is coming up soon today. It then goes to the president for his signature. Karen?
Jill, thank you. The Senate today also voted to kill the DREAM Act, meaning the Development Relief and Education for Alien Minors. It would have allowed citizenship for undocumented children who go to college or serve in the military. And the president this morning signed a bill to fund the federal government for another 3 days. A new development in the case of American exchange student Amanda Knox. She's serving time in Italy for the murder of her British roommate. And let's try that again. Amanda Knox serving time for the murder of her British roommate in Italy.
Good news for Amanda Knox. In her appeals trial, the 23-year-old from Seattle, convicted last year of murdering her roommate in Perugia, Italy, now on appeal, the court deciding today that they will allow a review of the evidence used in the original case. That is essentially starting things all over again. The first bit of good news for Amanda and her lawyers in a long time. In Rome, Greg Burke, Fox News Radio.
A house outside of Denver surrounded right now. The man inside is accused of shooting his wife. She's at the hospital now in stable condition. Police are evacuating homes around the target house, which is in the neighborhood of Castle Rock. Police say the man has fired several shots inside. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Give the gift of gab this holiday season. No reason to deal with long lines or have no idea what to buy for the person who has everything. Give them a gift certificate for their favorite personality on Fox News Talk Radio or Fox News Channel podcasts. It's as easy as jingle bells. Just go to foxnewsradio.com, click on gift certificate, and rest assured your Fox fan will think of you every time they listen to a Fox podcast. Remember, there's no place like Fox for the holidays.
As Americans, no matter what our faith, we have faith in our country. A country where our freedoms are blessed, cherished, and protected. Where we believe life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are our inalienable rights. Rights endowed by our Creator. We are not afraid to believe. Our beliefs unite us as a people and as a nation. They allow us to move forward.
One of the nation's biggest banks being sued by several states over mortgages.
The mortgage mess just will not go away. The latest example, the attorneys general of foreclosure-racked Arizona and Nevada are accusing Bank of America of misleading and deceiving homeowners who've tried to modify their home loans. The officials say hundreds of property owners kept making mortgage payments because the bank repeatedly said their loans were being modified. Instead, they lost their homes anyway. Bank of America says it's working with state leaders to broaden assistance to customers in trouble and is disappointed that the suits were filed now. Sal Giangrasso, Fox News Radio.
Winter storms have California officials bracing for problems. Possible flooding and mudflow issues in the San Gabriel Mountains and in Malibu. As much as 15 inches of rain could fall in the Sierra. Northern California could get as much as 5 inches of rain. And Southern California could get 4 inches of rain. A leading women's group is suing Hooters. Not for the reasons you might suspect.
The California chapter of the National Organization for Women doesn't mind that Hooters waitresses walk around in skimpy outfits. Here's what the group does mind.
Presenting sexually provocative themes and sexually provocative materials in front of children.
Chapter President Patty Bellisama saying some Hooters restaurants classify themselves as adult entertainment establishments but also serve minors. That's why the group's suing. No comment from Hooters, the company website saying Hooters serves all customers, including children. Pam Husso, Fox News Radio.
Ginger Littleton's 15 minutes began when she smacked a gunman at her Panama City, Florida school board meeting with her pocketbook. The brown faux crocodile purse then went up for auction on eBay, hitting more than $1,000 before eBay pulled it. The proceeds were supposed to go to a charity. The gunman in that shooting killed himself. He did not hurt anyone else when he opened fire. eBay says the auction was pulled because it did not meet the qualifications of a charitable auction. Karen Riegel, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You've got it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. The time is now 11:05. Time for your latest King of the Hill traffic update and weather forecast for this Saturday, December 18th, 2010. We're going to start off with a traffic update from the Santa Cruz area. About 10 minutes ago, CHP reported a solo vehicle spin out southbound 17 near Granite Creek Road. Looks like that vehicle came to rest in the center divider. Traffic at the Fishhook moving at the limit in both directions and in San Jose on the southbound side of Highway 17 near the Lexington Reservoir. Roadway flooding out there reported about 20 minutes ago, so be on the lookout if you're driving over there. Your KSCO weather forecast for today is for more rain with highs near 56 degrees. Winds are going to be south around 15 to 20 miles per hour. Gusts could reach as high as 25 miles per hour. Your forecast for tonight, even more rain with lows around 47 degrees. Out on the Monterey Bay today, there's a small craft advisory which will remain in effect throughout 9 p.m. this evening. Also out there on the bay today, you can expect south winds, 15 to 25 knots, decreasing to 5 to 15 knots later in the morning. Wind waves 3 to 5 feet and west swells 3 to 5 feet every 12 seconds along with more rain. Outside KSCO Studios, it's currently 55 degrees. The time is now 11:06. Time for hour number two of the Saturday special.
Oh, hi. That's my cue.
That was your cue, yeah.
Hey, Vay. All right. So how can I thank you, Dave, for putting a dependable clock up on the screen here?
A million bucks. A million bucks would be nice.
You're worth every penny of that and more. Unfortunately, I have not that kind of money at my disposal. I have, I think I have $1.50.
That's enough to buy a beer. I'll take it.
Okay, all righty. So, let's see. I believe we have a We have a world premiere K's commentary, don't we, here? But why don't we start hour number two officially, okay? And I can do that right here. Yeah.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but...
We're going to award the best caller and only caller of the hour to Cameron and Aptos, but we're going to do that after Kay's commentary.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Let's call this random thoughts. Number one, we citizens of the U.S. pride ourselves on probably being the one authentic democracy of the world. That being the case, how come we now and then are being confronted with the reality that our Congress decides that they are all somewhat better than we the people, so they create a universal health care plan for the rest of us, but they provide themselves with more expensive, different insurance that is very superior? How dare these people get away with that inequality in our so-called democracy? I say, if the government will provide the health care that we the people pay for, it should be the same for everyone, including the Congress and the President and his family. Second random thought. Sadly, we've been engaged in a very long war in Afghanistan, about 9 years. And sadly, at least 38,000 American soldiers have been wounded or died. Settling differences between countries with war is certainly not the answer. Can't we find a better, less barbaric way to get along? The United Nations is certainly not the answer, even though it was supposed to be, because now its agenda is not to settle nations' differences. It aspires to supersede countries and rule the world. We must remove ourselves from the United Nations. Third random thought. Those Americans who fight to defend our country, I believe, should get a bigger, higher wage than the Congress does. But that certainly is not the case. Once brave, dismissed, and wounded soldiers leave the military, the government drops the ball, and the American public is expected to help the soldiers with rehabilitation. The government should be responsible for that, but they do not respond as they should. Unfortunately, many veterans, not receiving government proper financial and emotional support, cannot face their situations, and now, sadly, many of them commit suicide when they return home, and this is shameful. And finally, another random thought and another inequity. We seniors who have contributed our share to the Social Security Fund for the past 2 years have been denied our yearly cost of living increase, while those in Congress with hefty salaries who denied us those funds continue to vote themselves 15% to 20% yearly increases, and that is not democratic. And I say it stinks. For KSCO, this is Kay's Whirling.
I love the way my mom minces no words at all.
Amen.
Yeah. By the way, if you go to KSCO.com, right on the homepage, over to the right, you'll see a picture of Kay's new book proofs have come out, and we're just trying to figure out how many to order. It's going to take, 2 to 3 weeks, they tell me, once we decide how many copies we're going to order. We hope to decide that within the next two or three days and have a signing ceremony here at KSCO sometime, you know, after the first week in January. Other thing that's happening on January 31st, 2011, we're going to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Zwirling Family acquisition of KSCO Radio. Can't believe it's gone. We've been at this for 20 years. Seems like about 20 minutes, but then an awful lot is how time flies when you're having fun here. But if you want to buy an advanced copy of Kay's commentary, where you just print out your receipt and bring it on down to the radio station as soon as they're available, or better yet, very soon after it's available, within days, we're going to schedule the little open house or something, some little event that we'll have here for people to come and pick up their copy of Kay's commentary and have her sign a autographed copy of them. So KSCO.com, and you can just click and order your advanced copy. And it's a really, really good book. Part of the decision process of how many books to order is apparently people have said to us who've looked at this that it should be in all the major bookstores too, because it's really good. I know I'm biased. She's my mom. But anyhow, back to our good friend Cameron in Aptos, who had asked a wonderful question earlier, and we had to, and the alligator caught her within.
Can I add to my question?
Please.
By the way, you can call me Dr. Jackson.
Okay, Dr. Jackson.
I'm a psychologist.
Okay, good.
And I was just thinking of like Dr. Corey, he's a dentist, but he calls himself a doctor. Well, I'm a doctor. I'm a psychologist, and I work as a psychologist.
Right.
Now,
okay.
And I happen to be married to Jim Jackson, who's an attorney.
I know Jim.
Yes, you do.
Sure.
Now,
great guy.
I think I'll broaden my second part of my question, which is, to say a little bit, I have a friend who quit her job at the jail. She was a social worker there. And she went full-time working as a social worker in a local prison about an hour from here. And it's a program for sexual offenders. I think it's about, she says it's 2 years long, 2 or 3 years long. I believe it's cognitive behaviorally based. And it takes people through these steps. When I heard about it, my first thought was, and she said, and all these men have to have already completed the number of years in prison that they're supposed to. And my first reaction was, well, they're older now. Those feelings are going to die down. Do we really need to have this kind of an expensive program? And it seems like we're funding more and more money into the prisons and like into this kind of a 3-year expensive program. Whereas, what about something as simple as pairing ammonia and shock and doing it outpatient? So, one, do you know about that program that's at a prison nearby? And what tools do you know of that are really good for diagnosing pedophilia? And then, three, what do you think is the best way to go in terms of cost effectiveness, which is what Kay Zwirling was talking about?
Yeah, those are very good questions, Dr. Jackson. I'll just call you Dr. J, if that's okay. in terms of the tools, there's a standard evidence-based protocol that you have to use, it's put out by the Society for Treatment of Sex Offenders. One of the key things is to assess their four deviant sexual interests. That seems to be the lowest common denominator of all sex offenders across the board, and that's done pretty easily by using computerized photos that I mentioned before. There are two instruments currently used that have this computerized technology. There will be another one out that will have a virtual reality visualization where people can interact and you can find out what their interests are. But the two that I use that are commonly used is the ABLE visual reaction time test and the affinity, AFFINITY test, that also measures their reaction to certain kinds of sexual stimuli. Once you have that information, then you put that into a algorithm, and you come up with an assessment of what they're looking at. So that's pretty important. In terms of the dollar spent, it's a total governmental boondoggle. If you've ever gone down to Coalinga State Hospital, they spent $200 million to build this hospital out in the middle of nowhere, which kind of goes back to the situation where in the old days they built these hospitals and put them way out in the countryside so people could realize, hey, you don't want to end up in that place. So it's out in the middle of nowhere.
In earthquake country, too.
It's not exactly the Beverly Hills of the Central Valley. So they spent all this money. They have these people down there. They are civilly committed after their prison term has expired. So it's almost a situation where you have double jeopardy. They stick these guys down. They spend millions of dollars. And guess what? The treatment really doesn't work that well.
Huh.
So there's other ways with the ammonia therapy, as you mentioned, with cognitive behavioral therapy. There's just no question that cognitive behavioral therapy is the key, because these people have significant thought pattern disorders based on the kinds of sentences that they tell themselves. If those sentences can be deconditioned, if you can change their thought pattern to get around these cognitive distortions and rationalizations that these guys have, you have a much better prognosis to change their behavior than spending millions and millions of dollars. And these doctors get a ton of money to move down there. So, you know, those are very good questions, and I hope I answered your issues.
Yes, you did. And what are, the third one you mentioned, there's a virtual reality.
That's
Could
coming.
Can you tell me a little bit about what's the name of it, or who's putting
well,
it out?
Well, it's coming out of the Pacific Northwest from a Dr. Laws, a guy I went to graduate school with at Berkeley. And what will happen is the person will be able to interact into a scene. Let's say they'll go into a mall. In the mall, there will be various targets. If the person starts to course towards a child, that is recorded. If they move towards a bookstore, if they move towards other areas, then you can track their behavior. This is done now with the Able and the Affinity, but they're two-dimensional pictures where people respond. The response is measured on a time frame, and you come up with a composite picture of, hey, look, this guy is looking at classes of people that represent deviant sexual interest. And it's basically classes of people that we're really looking at, not single people, not one photo, because everybody's attracted to a movie star now and again. But when you look at a complete classification of people, for example, children, that's not a good thing, and then we can make a diagnosis in order to help with the defense in the case. If Bill refers over a case, every time it's a psychological cocktail of tests that are presented in order to accurately diagnose the person, so Bill can have a defense, particularly if the person is falsely accused.
What comes to mind, I'm thinking of the horrible problems the Catholic Church has had with really, it's priests, male priests with boys of a certain age. They're pretty much not attacking girls. And I'm thinking maybe there could be some way where before you become a priest, you go through a a screening so that you're not attracted to classes of children such as boys.
Dr. J, that's a great suggestion. And I've talked to some people at Santa Clara University just recently, and that's exactly what they're going to be doing. Is it prospectively, upon hiring, there are certain classifications of people that need to take these kinds of tests. For example, people that work in child care. How about school teachers?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but particularly with novitiate priests, people that are going into the priesthood, we should have some appraisal of if they have any deviant sexual interest patterning in order to at least hedge our bets against something awful happening, as has beset the Catholic Church in the last 15 years and cost them billions of dollars.
So catch it and cure it.
That's right.
That sounds very good. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks very much for calling the Saturday special. Dr. Cameron Jackson from Aptos, appreciate it. 479-1080 is the phone number to call if you want to participate. And our next caller will be Susan in Pacific Grove about warning signs. Susan, you're on KSCO.
Thank you for this program. My broad question is, how can we prevent this from happening in the family, since that's the most prevalent? And, you know, why is this happening more often? I am in a situation where my son, married a beautiful girl in Southern California. It was a family wedding. And then 6 months later, we found out the father had molested everybody in the family, including the children. And it's like, how do you heal the family after that? My son didn't understand why he had no remorse. He said, I thought they liked it. And I don't know. It was really a tragedy, and I just was totally unaware, and I couldn't find any websites that dealt with the side of the perpetrator. It was all geared toward victims, and I just wondered how to get help in most families like this.
Well, I mean, you point out a very, very significant, very salient issue, which is that 68% of these kinds of attacks, molestations, pedophilic events are intrafamilial. One of the ways, and I think Bill pointed this out before, one of the ways to do this prospectively is observation. If you see somebody that has spends an inordinate amount of time with children, that is volunteering, that wants to do certain things with children, particularly in isolation, because most of these cases are done in isolation, although not all the time. So observation is a very important measure, as well as instructing the children to be careful, as was mentioned before, that they're not left alone, that there is a sense of parental vigilance. Did you know that 60%, see if I get these numbers right, so Michael won't beat me.
I don't do things like that.
Well, you're trying to quit, I know, and we're working on that. That 60% of the victims of child molestation are female. 40% are male. However, the males are assaulted more frequently and often than the females.
Wow.
It's very significant.
This was both. And it's like, it's so tragic because my daughter-in-law now is pregnant. Her father is not allowed in the house. Christmas is totally, you know, the one sister moved to the East Coast. We're all spending time together. They wrote a letter to every member of the family saying, I want you to be aware of this. You know, but like, oh, could they have been spared this? You know, people, you don't talk to children about, gee, you got to watch out for grandpa.
Well, you know what? Now's the time to change that situation. And now is the time, based on these statistics and numbers of patients that come in who do molest not only their own children, but social circle children that they are connected to in schools, social events, Little League, whatever. So, you know, we've got to change that pattern.
I think it's awareness, and that
it is.
They were all so ashamed. And this girl is a doctor, and sister is a school teacher. And the dad was very prominent in the community. It can strike anybody, I believe, now. It's not.
You know, they used
but
to.
It's so hidden.
That's exactly right. It is hidden, and it used to be that we would look for this perverse weirdo hanging around the shopping center. But this condition of child molestation, pedophilia, is across the board. Every socioeconomic class, all educational classes, all wealthy, poor, urban, rural. It's across the board. And it is really, it's up to us to stop looking at people at the shopping center and to begin to focus on relationship. You know, I never thought about that. Bob keeps wanting to take little Billy to the swimming pool all the time, and Billy really doesn't like it. Well, there you've got a red flag, you've got an indicator, and you don't have to ostracize the person, but you can gently cut that situation off so you don't end up with a terrible situation like you have. And that's it's a bad situation. I feel sorry for your entire family.
And I mean, we've all kind of regrouped our family, and my son is, like, very strong. But he was incensed that this guy said, well, I thought they liked it, and he showed no remorse. And at that point, he said, that's it. And I contacted a psychologist, and he came back with, he's very prominent in this area, came back with, well, why is your son so angry? We have to look at your son's anger. And I was like, no.
Whoa.
I don't know.
You know what? This is what you just said, that he thought he liked it. That is part and parcel of the rationalization cognitive distortion patterning that these guys have. You know, here's another one. It's okay because she was 13. It's not that bad because she initiated it. It's not that bad because she seemed to enjoy it.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so as well as what you said. So these patterns are something that have to be deconditioned with these people so they can get over this condition.
I was a teacher for 30 years, and I thought I was on top of everything. I feel so naive, naive that I didn't know there were patterns like it. So that's why it's so valuable that you're speaking today.
Well, a lot of us don't. And John, if you don't mind, Susan, I just wanted, John, I wanted you to comment on the fact that we've talked about this before, that many times, not only in family situations, but out, molesters have been molested themselves, and that's...
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And you may know of Uncle Jimmy may have been molested. If you know about that, folks, you got to tell your kids to watch out for Uncle Jimmy.
That's right. That's exactly right. And 40% of these people that engage in this behavior have been molested. They then reenact this molestation situation based on their own internal confused psychology that includes an identification with the aggressor. They identify.
Oh, wow.
It's very intriguing. Some of this research came out of the stuff in the concentration camps in Germany, where they found that the Jews in the concentration camps who were assigned as guards began to identify with the Nazis. They began to find little pieces of uniforms and wore hats, and they began to identify with the aggressor.
And Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah. It's very similar to the Stockholm syndrome, but this is even worse because they engaged in this kind of extra punitive behavior, and in fact, they treated the other Jews more harshly than the actual Nazis did because of this identification with the aggressor. It's a psychological defense mechanism. That's what happens to this 40% of people who are molested. They satellize or connect to the aggressor. They themselves then act out these scenarios in later life, or not necessarily in later life. I mean, a lot of this research has changed. I mean, a lot of these people start at age 10. I mean, you know, like 30% of people that are child molested start at age 10 with some sort of experimentation, exploratory behavior.
Wow. Fascinating. I mean, I was just frustrated because I don't know if you know of. If I'm just one person, there must be so many more that were shocked and horrified with this kind of situation. And I think the more information we have, the better we're able to handle this and prevent. So.
Well, I think that's why Michael's doing the show, is to get information out to the public. So. A new perspective can be had, so we can figure these things out and possibly eliminate future assaults.
Do you think it's best that my son basically said, nobody goes near any children in the family? And
well, anything that's going to protect the child is probably the key. You know, you've got a very involved situation, obviously. A lot of these psychological tendrils are going to have to be unraveled, and at some point, I'm sure you're going to reach, resolution, but it's not going to be that easy.
Okay.
If you need any information, you can email me.
Go ahead.
If you'd like to.
Okay.
It's psych.
Wait. I'm away from my pencil. Okay, psych.
PSYCH 007.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, my little boy picked that out for me, so he's smarter than I am. Psych007@att.net.
Well, great. I just was not knowing where to go, and I really am pretty good with the internet, but it was like...
Well, now you know.
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
thank
Susan
you
in
so
Pacific
much.
Grove, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Mike in Aptos, shock treatment? Mike?
Yeah, well, I'm just... Yeah, hello.
You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay. I'm just commenting on the psychologist that called in a little earlier that was trying to make an analogy with a German Shepherd. If there's any experimentation going on with shock and aversive therapy, I know from working with dogs that it can also have a kickback effect. It's not a slam dunk. You can actually make a dog more aggressive with using shock as aversion therapy. And if you have an aggressive dog, you've got to work with it your whole life. Now, my concern is psychology is an extremely subjective discipline. And you hear time and time again about these pedophiles who have only served like 3 and 4 years. I mean, this guy that was just over in the East Bay that raped this 2-year-old child in a store. Somebody let him out of prison after he had molested an 8-year-old. So I have two questions. Number one, what kind of training do psychologists that are in the prison system, is that standardized or does it vary? And two, the only thing I would think that would be any kind of therapy you can look at is to actually eliminate those parts of the brains that have that feedback system. And is there any way of re-looking at some kind of form of lobotomy if these guys are going to be put back out on the streets?
I haven't heard that word in a while.
Yeah, I mean, the very good question. You know, I'm glad you brought up the research with the dog, because there's no question there can be unanticipated negative consequences to using aversive therapy. That happens. The point is that if you use ammonia therapy and you're attempting to decondition bad sexual responses or let's say those towards children or defenseless people, you know, that's okay. I mean, we just have to run that gamut. But it's not physical shock therapy like was done in some of the Milgram studies and the early studies where they attempted to decondition certain kinds of responses. To the training, I've met a lot of the people that work in Coalinga State Hospital, and that's the number one place where all the sexually violent predators are housed now. They've all been moved out of Atascadero down to Central California to the Beverly Hills of the Valley, and they have good training. I mean, they're young psychologists, there's psychiatrists, there's treatment teams, and they are trying to do something. Well, unfortunately, it seems that the government, the more money they spend on these things, that the less efficacious it is, it just doesn't work. A lot of the private treatment agencies or treatment people, such as myself, and I'm not saying I'm better than or worse than anybody else, but seem to have a more positive probability of changing behavior than these expensive hospital settings that engage in all this therapy.
I guess the question I have about that, though, is what kind of long-term follow-up is being done? Because if you deal with any, pathway in the human system, it can develop collateral pathways. And, I mean, if you have somebody who's out on the street that's just having to come in once a week or so for parole or for therapy, you don't know what he's doing the rest of the time. I mean, for me...
Yeah, that's good. You're right. I mean, but you can't decorticalize people because they've been charged with a sex offense. That's probably not going to work. The pathway issue is there are many pathways to offending. Probably the largest pathway to offending is the irrational thought pattern that these people have. That's why cognitive behavioral therapy has been such a godsend to our profession. It changes the way people think. And there's even some indication that when you change the way you think, you may change the neuroplasticity of your own brain. And that's a pretty far-out thought.
And I think that would work in most of us, but what kind of challenge do you have then when you have somebody that has additional disorders? Because if you have somebody who's maybe been molested, extensively as a child, what about the personality disorder that might be on top of that? Or what about somebody who's, say, a schizophrenic, as I think this gentleman over in the East Bay was? How much more does that add to any kind of, you know, potential treatment?
No, some cases they're going to run the gamut from those that are easiest to treat to those that are impossible. When you have people that have multiple personality disorders, including such a diagnosis as schizophrenia or antisocial personality disorder, which is also hard to decondition, you're running uphill. All you can do is try. So the kinds of therapies that are used, particularly with the cognitive behavioral therapies, do have an impact on the pathways to offending.
Okay, we got to move on. We have quite a number of callers. I want to thank Mike in Aptos for his call to 479-1080. It's the Saturday special with our special guests, Dr. John Brady, PhD, forensic psychologist, and William Chestnut, who is criminal defense attorney. It's your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. We've got Sarah in Santa Cruz and Tom in Santa Cruz and Z in Aptos, or maybe it's V, Annalise in Soquel. So stay with us. There's a lot more headed your way on the Saturday special. But right now we have a commercial break. So, Dave, you're in control. Thanks.
In this time of economic uncertainty, Connection Magazine features local experts in finance, health, and personal growth. If you want to empower yourself, let go of limiting beliefs, take charge of your own health, and be calm and centered, then Connection Magazine is your guide for your personal transformation. This is your source for wellness and preventative alternatives as well as traditional medicine. Connection Magazine connects you with the community. It promotes cooperation, ecology, local and regional classes, lectures, performances, and festivals. It features themes each month as well as directories for green business services and martial arts. Connection Magazine informs you about important issues such as the light brown apple moth spraying, the up-and-coming 2012 transformations, and so much more. Promoting health, fitness, fun, art, adventure, and awareness. You'll find it everywhere, distributed in the four counties of San Mateo, Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, and Monterey. Pick one up and enhance your life.
If you're planning an office party, a holiday gathering, or a New Year's celebration, remember, for a safe, fun, and festive way to celebrate the holidays, have plenty of Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider on hand. Martinelli's, in the traditional champagne bottle, is the perfect choice for your holiday gatherings. It has all the elegance and sparkle of champagne, but without the alcohol. And you know, Martinelli's has the best flavor because it's made only from U.S.-grown fresh apples, not from foreign concentrate like most other brands. Martinelli's looks great, tastes great, and complements all your favorite foods, from party snacks and buffets to holiday dinners. Martinelli's, fun, festive, and non-alcoholic. Enjoy the original, Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider, a family tradition since 1868.
This is Stephen Martinelli. I'm here with my son, John, the fourth generation president of our family's 140-year-old cider company.
All of us at Martinelli's wish you a safe and festive holiday season and a happy new year.
Attention KSCO land, finally, the long-requested book of Kay's commentaries is about to become a reality. We've received proof copies and expect to have a station open house in January where those who have purchased copies of
For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling
on the KSCO.com website will receive their autographed copy from Kay herself. Purchase your advance copy today at KSCO.com and take comfort in the fact that all proceeds from Kay's book will go toward keeping your favorite radio station, your favorite radio station, and making it even better. This beautiful hardbound book of Kay's best thoughts, wisdom, and gems sent from others to share with Kay's audience will make a wonderful gift for anyone for whom you have esteem or wish to make smarter. And though it won't arrive in time for Christmas, you could certainly announce to all on your special gift list that it is forthcoming and well worth the wait. But don't wait. Go to KSCO.com now and buy this book.
For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
The winter storm season has arrived here in California, and that means an increased chance of power outages. Pacific Gas and Electric Company works hard to prepare for and minimize storm-related outages. However, some things are just in Mother Nature's control. And the most important thing for you to do is keep safe. PG&E asks that you report any downed power lines immediately by calling 1-800-PGE-5002. Again, that's 1-800-PGE-5002. You should never try to touch or move the lines yourself. If you lose power at home, turn off or unplug appliances to prevent the risk of equipment damage when your power is restored. At your request, we'll be happy to provide you with a call when it's safe to plug them back in. When an outage does occur, PG&E is doing everything they can to get your power restored as quickly as possible and give you up-to-date information on your expected time of restoration. The 20,000 dedicated men and women of PG&E thank you for your patience and encourage you to stay safe.
Your electrical problems are no problem when you take direct action and call Direct Electric. Hello, I'm Priscilla Christie.
And I'm Dave Christie. From blown fuses to power outages to remodels, Direct Electric will fix your electrical problems. And Direct Electric will do it right the first time at the right price with no service charge. Listen.
My name is Tom Wetzel. I live in Aptos, and we've worked with Direct Electric. They came in, assisted us putting in a new hot tub. They were very professional and very timely and did great work at a great price. It was kind of a tricky job. It was at an elevated part of the property away from the main house, and it was kind of difficult to get the wiring up there. They did a fantastic job for us.
Your electrical problems are no problem when you take direct action and call Direct Electric.
If you are in real trouble, ask for Direct Electric 60-minute emergency service. Direct Electric, that's the name. Service and quality, that's what's in the name. Direct Electric, 425-1407, 425-1407.
Coast Paper and Supply, in business over 50 years, has a huge inventory of janitorial supplies. Bleach, germicidals, dishwashing and disinfectants. They have deodorizers, carpet care, and floor finish items, hand soap, dish soaps, and building maintenance supplies and equipment. Coast Paper and Supply does not require memberships. Just walk in the door at 151 Josephine Street and River Street. Enjoy the pleasant welcome and friendly service. Coast Paper and Supply is open to both retail and the public and a proud member of Think Local First.
You're listening to KSCO, serving King City, Mount Hermon, and Tulare.
I don't know if this clock is right, but it says 11:43 on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. You know what? Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to look at the one that is right. It's 11:43 and 55, 56. Okay, and we got four people on the line, no fewer than four people. Before I forget, I want to put this out. Maybe these four people can answer this question. The next two Saturday specials are on holidays, you know, Christmas and New Year. What should we do? What are probably fewer people than normal are listening to the Saturday special on Christmas and New Year's. But I could be wrong. I mean, maybe the same amount or maybe more. Who knows? It's probably less. I think that's a safe bet. So that being said, what should we do? Should we do something totally off the wall and wacky? Should we have a rerun of a favorite Saturday special from years ago? What topic or guest do you think that we should have? If assuming we could get a guest on
Santa Claus,
that's an idea, huh? So yeah, give that some thought, gang, and either mention it to me when you're on the air here. We got about 16 minutes left, or send me an email, mz@ksco.com. Perfect opportunity to take the day off both days. So maybe we'll do that. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. But it might be more fun to just do something wacky, like do a special thing with people and computers and sort of experiment with KSCO becoming sort of a TV station, because I want to do that too with new media and all this technology. This brilliant guy I became acquainted with in Denver, who's got an amazing piece of software that can work well with, you know, six people listening and tuned in on the internet at the same time, or 600,000 or 6 million people. Doesn't take up bandwidth. It's absolutely amazing. So maybe we'll mess around with that. Next caller, Sarah in the Santa Cruz Mountains. No, it says Santa Cruz Molestation. Excuse me, not mountains. Sarah in Santa Cruz regarding molestation. You're on the air.
Hi, I want to take a moment. My heart is just about to pop out. I'm 50 years old, and this is the most emotional issue that I've dealt with my entire life. And I just want to send out an emotional hug to everybody that is triggered by this unbelievably emotional topic, and to also ground us and have compassion for everybody who has suffered with this, which is, I remember in the 80s this came out, Roseanne had these memories and different things, and it's so complex. And I also want to say it's a very dangerous subject if you say, watch if a man has been molested to have him arrested. This is so complicated because I want to say one thing, is my brothers were molested. And when they came out in the 80s and said, my brother's very afraid of to say something. And when he came out, his best friend's wife said, do not let him be around my children. This was devastating to my brother, who was a kind, gentle victim. And when you said, be careful, because people, of course, when you've been molested, you are going to be stigmatized further if you come out and you're a man than if you're a woman. And I also want to say how complicated the situation is. For one thing, you have pedophiles that are sadistic. And my brothers were victims of a sadistic pedophile. And there's a contrast between that type of predator that we would associate with maybe serial killing and the loved ones who, say, for instance, my father, my biological father, had a lot of confusion and immaturity. Now, he molested my older sister, and for the rest of his life, was very sorry it ruined his life, did everything he could to try to rectify it and get her help. What had happened with him is he was confused, disturbed, and but he was a very good man. This man was a liberal, environmentalist, loving man who had four more children after her. And I, like I said, it ruined his life. He tried to make whatever went on in his mind that was wrong, he came out and he said, I am so sorry I touched my daughter inappropriately. And he would spend the rest of his life and die early because of the gravity of what he had done. And like I said, he had four more children, never molested them, did nothing but spend the rest of his life trying to make good on what he had done when he was 25, 26 years old. He died when he was 65. So what I'm trying to say is this is very multi-layered. It's a very complex situation. And when you come out and you say, you know, of course everyone's going to say, we want to hang them, we want to castrate them, we want to shock them. But who, when you're talking about families, we're also talking about people's sons that they love. We're talking about brothers, fathers, people that, I mean, I love my father dearly. All of us loved him. Even my sister was molested by him. And I'm not talking about severe sadistic molestation. I'm talking about inappropriate touching when he was, like I said, confused, and my mother divorced him, and it ruined all of our lives, basically, in some fashion. Of course, you know, we went on. But I just want to say that it's an emotional thing. Be responsible. When you start reacting to these things emotionally and you run out and you start saying things like to my brother, who was 18 years old and came out after being, you know, don't touch my son. You know, you have been molested, so you are going to be a molester. This is ignorant, inappropriate responses. Calm down and understand first from compassion. And I have been molested myself, which, of course, seems like almost everybody in the world has been molested by now. And I have hate and anger and complex feelings, but I also have sadness and compassion and what the hell is going on in a human being that they would abuse somebody in any way, verbally or, you know, all of us need to really look at what we're doing as a society to turn around, especially at Christmas and this time of year, and try to love each other instead of hurting each other. Because we're hurting each other. We're getting together and we're just abusing each other, especially families. Thanksgiving, Christmas are wonderful examples of getting together in dread, and they call them the holidays for people that have been abused because wow. They're so difficult. Have I said enough? Have I taken up enough time? I'm so sorry.
I'd like to have you on forever here, Sarah, because, you know, you're really adding to the program, but we do have some other, you know, a number of other people.
Absolutely.
We only have about 10 minutes to go. Thanks so much for calling.
Point well taken.
Thank you, and God bless everybody out there.
Thank you.
It says Z in Aptos, but is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, Z in Aptos. Welcome to KSCO.
Hi. I have a local program for treatment of sex offenders with a partner, and I wanted to go back to the subject of the aversive therapy, which you're far from right now.
Right.
But what we do in our program, and I believe this works better than the ammonia capsules, is what we call cognitive restructuring. And we pair the behavior with a negative consequence. And the example I always use from my own life is when I think of smoking, my stomach gets upset immediately. And so what we do is I find that probably is more effective. And I've read that using ammonia capsules and electric shock do not last. So I just wanted to put that out.
No, I understand that. See, and that's good that there is a local program. The problem, of course, with some of this aversive conditioning is that not only does your stomach get upset, but if you go to a steakhouse, then you might get sick because there's smoke in the steakhouse.
It doesn't do that.
But I know, but I'm just saying that this is a generalization gradient, that stuff generalizes from one specific situation, which is the aversive one you're trying to decondition, which is the sexual, the inappropriate sexual viewing or response, and it generalizes over to other things. Other kinds of treatment, you mentioned the cognitive restructuring. That's great, because at the bottom line of this whole thing is that thoughts procreate the behavior.
Right,
Without faulty thinking patterns, there is no behavior.
And that's basically the foundation of our program.
That's great.
Is cognitive restructuring.
Good.
But I also use it in the aversive work. Is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Appreciate your call, Z.
Okay.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
It's this from Alan in Watsonville, an email. Dear MZ, I have experience of a situation in which my daughter's teacher, who is both very innovative but also strict, was falsely accused of molestation by a young girl who later recanted. This teacher, who was superior in his profession, was ruined by the mere accusation. He was tried and convicted on innuendo and lies in the newspaper and was never able to function again as a teacher. What protections are there for false accusations, especially in light of the fact that most of these are familial situations?
Well,
okay, Bill?
Speaking in terms of, as an attorney, the first thing is, if the police call you up and they want you to come down and talk to them about something, please don't. Call an attorney. The worst thing would be for you to get convicted out of your own mouth. And with all due respect for the police, I mean, these are professionals who need confessions, want confessions, and are able to get them. You're at a very disadvantage, very much disadvantaged by trying to fend for yourself with one of them.
Uh-huh.
Any of us would be. So you really should consult an attorney. They will record everything you say and sometimes lose things in the recordings that you said that might help you. And they will also, they can lie to you. They can give you information that's false to make you feel uncomfortable and confess. So, for gosh sakes, I don't know about this particular gentleman, Alan, but, I think, you know, he may have cooperated with the police or tried to and figured, you know, they're my guardians, I trust them. But when you're on the spotlight as a suspect in one of these crimes, you need professional help. Absolutely.
How does one get in touch with you, Phil?
I can give you a contact number.
Okay.
It's 24/7 numbers 408-298-6990. It's 24/7. However, if you call me at 3 a.m., I probably won't hear the phone.
Okay.
So, but do not speak to the police without talking to a lawyer.
Right. We're going to go to Annalise next. Wait a minute. I guess we're not. Annalise called, but we were going to. Here's Tom in Santa Cruz. Tom, welcome to the Saturday special. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Well, I've been listening to this program, and with the way things are going on in the educational system, where kids are being indoctrinated about homosexuality and lesbianism at such an early age, Don't you think that's creating a problem?
Creating a problem in terms of what?
These kids, their minds are forming. It takes a long time for their minds to form properly. And when you have people in there with their own agendas, teaching them that there's nothing wrong with these behaviors, that also adds to the problem, don't you think?
You know, I think that the more exposure that somebody gets to alternative lifestyle is probably a healthy situation. It really goes back to the parenting situation where the parents have to instill the correct values. But I don't see an increase in negative sexual behavior based on people being bombarded with certain kinds of sexual alternative lifestyle information.
Well, therein lies the rub, because when a teacher has that child for 8-10 hours a day, and that is the indoctrination going on, the parent is basically at a disadvantage when they learn about it later. And it's very difficult to parent the kid when that kind of thing is going on.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying. We just have a little departure in terms of what the end game is. The more exposure, I mean, this whole show is devoted to exposing people to the various ins and outs of these kinds of behaviors, whether it's pedophilia, whether it's rape or assault. I just don't get the perspective that by having more information out and not indoctrinating people, but having more information out there is unhealthy.
I can understand that if they were developed enough to make adult decisions, but I tend to disagree with the fact that if you've got a situation where people are actually indoctrinating our children on a different way of sexual activity, okay, that actually sets up a situation for pedophilia.
Okay, you know what? It's 11:58 and 54 seconds. That means we have about 1 minute left from right now. So thank you, Tom in Santa Cruz, for your call on the Saturday special. Thank you, John Brady. Thank you, Bill Chestnut.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, MZ.
Very interesting program. There's a lot of information that needs to be put out there that people just don't talk about. So I'm happy we got to at least touch on it today. Appreciate it. Continued success to both of you. Appreciate your being on with us. Great job as usual, Dave. Appreciate it. That's about it. This program will be rebroadcast tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and 12 midnight. Right here at KSCO AM 1080. And later, after we post it on the podcast sections, you can hear it on demand at KSCO.com. KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 12 noon. Here is Fox News.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel. The military's don't ask, don't tell policy is going before the Senate for a vote to see if it should be kept. Let's go live to Washington and Fox News Radio's Jill Nato.
Karen, the Senate approaching the final vote to repeal don't ask, don't tell in a lame duck session of the Senate, ruffling some feathers on Capitol Hill. Arizona Republican John McCain.
We are jamming major issues through the Senate of the United States because they know they can't get it done beginning next January 5th.
But Democrat Patrick Leahy of Vermont says it's time.
As one combat veteran said, I don't care whether the soldier next to me is straight or not. I care whether he can shoot straight or not.
The Hill already passed it, the president promising to sign the repeal. Karen?
Jill, thank you. The dream is dead.
Motion is not agreed to.
The DREAM Act, otherwise known as the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act, would have carved a path to citizenship for children of illegal immigrants by having them serve in the military or go to college. The DREAM Act, however, failed in procedure 55-41. President Obama talked about the just-signed tax deal in his weekly address. The president says he's happy something could be hammered out.
I'm heartened by our ability to come together to do what's best for middle-class families across this country.
and for our economy as a whole.
Republicans talked about the tax bill, too, saying higher taxes were prevented.
Those higher taxes would have been devastating to millions of American families and small businesses and could have increased the risk of a double-dip recession. But our bipartisan agreement with the White House changed all that.
That's Texas Senator John Cornyn. Cops in suburban Denver have surrounded a home where a man allegedly shot his pregnant wife. She's in stable condition after police say she ran from the home with a child. Police say the man is still inside that home in Castle Rock and that shots have been fired inside. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
The Judge goes primetime. Every night at 8 on Fox Business, he's challenging big government, exposing shady D.C. deals, and defending your rights all week long. Freedom Watch every night at 8. Plus, Eric Bolling's at a brand new time, keeping you in the know with all the shocking stories of greed and corruption around the country. Don't miss Follow the Money, weeknights at 9 and Thursdays at 10 on Fox Business, the power to prosper. Is about hard work and forward thinking, building, growing, and that it's called the American dream for a reason. It's why Fox Business pushes the limit.
This administration chooses policy over people.
Close to $4 trillion in federal spending.
Contrary to what Washington wants you to believe, times are tough.
Calling out corruption and standing up to government overregulation, and we'll never quit, is why we move forward. Fox Business Network, the power to prosper.
The father of three missing Michigan boys won't say where his children are. Meantime, their mother waits.
5, 7, and 9-year-old Tanner Alexander and Andrew Skelton were last seen in their father's yard. John Skelton is being held on a $30 million bond, arrested after a suicide attempt. He claims he left the boys with a female acquaintance. Police don't believe it and don't expect a positive outcome. But the boys' mother, Tanya Skelton, doesn't agree. She says nights are the most difficult time, especially around 7 o'clock.
Which is when our nighttime routine starts at home. And those are hard. My children are out there alive, and yes, they are coming home.
John and Tanya Skelton were going through a divorce when the boys disappeared. Jennifer Kuiper, Fox News Radio.
The rain is coming to California. Officials are worried about flooding and mud flow issues for places that have suffered wildfires. Northern California could get up to 5 inches of rain this weekend. San Francisco is handing out sandbags to residents to prepare for flooding. Good luck getting anywhere in Europe.
Grounded flights, frayed nerves.
People are really starting to get fed up.
She was among the thousands stranded in a snowstorm. Airports closed, flights canceled and delayed in England, France, Germany, Holland, Switzerland. The list goes on. From Northern Ireland to Bulgaria, the snow snuck up on would-be travelers near London.
We were just outside of Gatwick and there was nothing. And 5 minutes in, it's just a nightmare.
Gatwick eventually reopened, but flights were still backed up. And it's not just planes, trains, and automobiles also crawling at best. Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
An old sailor has died. Neptune was a gray seal who helped out the U.S. Navy in the 70s, retrieving tools and equipment for divers, hunting for landmines, and locating submarines. Neptune was part of a team of seals and sea lions and dolphins who worked for the Navy. Upon Neptune's retirement, he was donated and eventually wound up at the Toledo Zoo. The zoo says Neptune was around 36 and that he died of old age. Karen Riegel, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You've got it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's Sunday. It's Saturday, December 18th, 2010. I'm Dave Michaels with traffic and weather for you. We'll start off with traffic at the Fishhook. Traffic moving at the limit over in Monterey County, though. A traffic collision with no details. Northbound 101 at 5th Street. That was just reported by CHP. Vehicle versus a guardrail and is now against the hill. Highway 17 just north of Vine Hill Road, a traffic hazard reported at 11:55. Looks like we have some roadway flooding out there. Bear Creek Road just west of Summit Road, traffic hazard reported at 11:13. This is a stalled vehicle partially blocking the roadway around a blind curve. Highway 17 near Laurel Curve, a traffic collision with no injuries reported at 11:13. The number one lane is currently closed while they try to get that vehicle out of there. This was an overturned vehicle. They need a flatbed, which is now out there, and that should be corrected shortly. Over on the other side of the hill, we'll start off in San Jose. Things looking pretty good for right now. No major incidents to report, but if you see something that we missed, be sure to give us a call at 475-1080. Coming up next, perspectives here on AM 1080 KSEO Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name's Donald Davidson. I'm your host. Joining me in the studio to host the show today is Dr. David Biles. And just before we get started, I do want to thank everyone who showed up to speak out against the smart meters on Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors meeting. I understand it's been put on their agenda in the future to be discussed and voted on. We have to keep the pressure up. So remember to watch for the supervisors meeting, showing up and speaking out. There's a number of states that are fighting this, and if I didn't express it last week, the state of Hawaii has already opted out of the smart meter program. And by the way, if the argument is that PG&E already has a percentage of meters in place, fine, let's force those places into a wired connection and demand any areas unconverted to presently to remain unconverted indefinitely. Don't forget to email your supervisors, or you can call and get that email address if you call, of course, 831 area code 454-2200. That's 454-2200. You will get a live person, and you can ask for the supervisor of your choice in your district and their email address and or voicemail. But you'll get a live voice at the end of that number. It's really nice. For those that have just tuned in, our very special guest today is Dr. Philip Molica. And his website is, if you're ready for that, is rockmoldental.com. That's rockmoldental.com, R-O-C.